Honestly, you guys, thank you so much for coming to talk. I can't imagine a better group of people to talk about these particular questions, and I have so many questions for you. And I'm really glad about this group. So we have Stephanie. You have been a teacher, correct?
I have.
And you helped write the curriculum for Second Step, so you know a lot about it. And
yeah,
you
correct.
Have three kids. The youngest is 8.
Yes.
Right? And you deal with customer support.
Mm-hmm.
So you're very good at explaining Second Step, which is going to come in handy. And
that's right.
You have a child in second grade.
Second grade going to third grade. Almost 8 years old now.
So you're right in our pocket for this.
I am.
And Shauna's our chief of staff, so she can explain everything.
Oh.
And your daughter is grown, so you can tell us how all this is going to turn out. So
that is
great.
I'm very curious. When the child is having a meltdown and is unreachable, what do we tell parents? Or what's your experience? What was like the worst ever where they just couldn't be reached?
My worst, and we actually have a picture of it because it was so funny.
Picture.
Yeah. She was 4 or 5, and the worst was that she had this meltdown at our house. We found a dead rat from our cat in the hallway. And gross, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So I got a bag and I grabbed it and I was putting it away. And she was so upset that I was throwing it away.
Wow.
She wanted to see it and she wanted to touch it. And come on, that is safety. Health and safety are my two things.
Right.
So she had the biggest meltdown I've ever seen in my life.
Oh.
On the floor, snot running. In that moment, she's totally unreachable and you're trying to tell her, it's a dead rat with potential germs, all these things, nothing. And so honestly, what we had to do, you just sit there and you have to be the calm in the storm. Mm-hmm. Don't get upset. Yes, this is a meltdown. And if you're in Target, that might be a different—
I was about to say, what about
the
public situations?
The public situations, it might be a little bit different where you need, you know, to take her into a new space, but give her that space. But she's not gonna hear what you're saying, right? The logic isn't there. It's that limbic system that's going wild right now, and the emotions are just running. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to hear all of that. So it's really about giving space, trying to do calming things for your child that you know are kind of calming. And then once they get through that, then you can have the logical discussion with them about what really happened. But in this case, it was really just sitting on the stairs and watching her have a complete meltdown without saying, yes, I'm going to give in to that thing. Mm-hmm. That's the other hard part, is immediately you want to give them the thing they're melting down about. And that's not always the right thing either, especially not with a dead rat, but a Target too, right? It's not that, yes, now I'll just get you the toy.
Right.
That's actually habit forming,
right,
and teaching them a behavior versus allowing them to have the emotion around it and figuring out, like, how do I get through that and still not get what I wanted out of it, right?
So for kids at this age, though, that heightened reaction, it's not a choice, correct? Like, this is just—
it's that limbic system.
They're awash in it.
Yeah.
So for the parents, so I feel like there's a parent who feels that they need to get in and fix it, that, which we know doesn't work, but also that that letting the child have that tantrum is teaching them something. But that's not true. We're not giving in to them by letting them have the fit. Because I've seen the moms in the grocery store and the kid is just screaming, the mom is just shopping.
Yeah.
And some people who don't have kids or don't know are like, oh, what are you going to do? But that is the way to go, to just let them— we're not harming them by letting them be in that space, correct?
That's right.
Correct. Yeah. And I think the other side of that too, being the mom in Target who's had this happen before, you feel embarrassed and you feel some way. So you start to escalate and then you escalate on the child because you want that child. And so it actually makes it worse. And that can be a hard thing because, again, it's that adult EQ where, wait a minute, I'm about to have an emotion. That's a really hard thing to stop myself from. And I don't do it 100% of the time. I mean, but that's part of it, is, are you projecting what you're feeling on the child too? And then it actually escalates them even more.
I found the meltdown in the toy aisle of Target to be very instructive, that it's okay for my son to not know what toy to choose. And if he can't, and he's sitting down on the ground crying, if there are other parents walking past, tutting, or some know the feeling very well, and some like judging, you have to ignore that.
Mm.
You have to meet your child where they're at. You need to talk to them. And you also have to not get frustrated. You're like, This was a simple pickup. We were going to be 5 minutes. I'm going to be late for this. I've got stuff to do today. You have to throw that out the window if you can, and meet the child where they're at and talk to them. It's difficult. I find it difficult.
So, and you also have to talk yourself through it, yes. Right? It's you're managing. You're trying to help them. You're also trying to help yourself. I had a public incident in a restaurant, one of my favorite restaurants. It was that situation where I had to remove my daughter from the table and let her breathe, but also simultaneously remind myself to breathe. And this is just a moment. Yeah. She's allowed to have emotions. She's allowed to go through these moments that aren't going to feel good for her or for me, but that's life. And, you know, you're doing that simultaneous bit can be really, really challenging. This was because she wanted to put tons of salt on a tortilla chip. And I had the audacity to say no. And we had to talk it out.
So it is what we would consider, like, small things are very upsetting.
Sure.
So it sounds like, so for parents, a lot of the goal here is to emotionally manage yourself before you come to your child.
Oh, yeah. It's a really hard part.
Yeah, to let go of the judgment of the other adults in the room must be a little taxing, a little difficult. Like, how do you let go of that person who's going or rolling their eyes at you or the other diners?
You have to have empathy for yourself and for other people in scenarios, right? When you're on a plane and there are new parents with a baby. I've been there. I know what that's like. So you have to, I think, sometimes drown out the noise of other people's judgments because you're doing the best you can. As parents, you do the very best you can, and you hope that other people get that, and they empathize with you, and you give yourself some grace, and you just move on. You keep moving through the moments.
So do you guys actually do, like, breathing exercises like we teach the kids? Like,
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Breathe. Always breathe in.
For me, it's shut your mouth first. Like, it's less.
We ourselves, the adult.
Yes, myself. Meaning, because I'm a talker. I'm a loud person. I say what's on my mind very quickly. And in those moments, I should not be doing any of those things. So the first thought I have instead of breathing is, like, close your mouth first so nothing falls out that you can't take back, right? And that you can't put on your kid.
Right.
So that's always my first thought. It's like, I need you to take a beat so you can actually think through what you're really going to say and not just blurt something out.
And is that what you guys were talking about, where you inadvertently escalate the child? You feed into their fire.
Yes.
What are the moves that do that? Just any kind of meeting that emotion with any kind of heightened emotion? Or
I find that if my wife is talking to our child and trying to help them through a moment, if I step in and have my say or try to help, it just further escalates it. It just fans those flames. And I've learned to step back and say, okay, my wife's got this. And if she needs me, she'll call for me. And sometimes you have to let the other person, if they've got the situation, let them deal with it. And if they need you, then you can come in and help.
Do you feel like your son responded because, like, now everyone is staring at me?
It's a two,
like,
two
a
against one.
Even though it's mom and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But with the escalation thing, I do escalate her sometimes. And the thing that I have to know is when we are having an escalation, even when we walk away, sometimes I'm like, I did that. Mm-hmm. Right? She was doing something I didn't want her to, but I actually sent her off and I have to go tell her that. Right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you say the thing that you're thinking that you should not say to your 8-year-old child. Right? Okay, that was wrong of me to say. And I can admit that, and I shouldn't have said that. But let's look at, you know, the whole situation. And then it actually, when we're in a calmer space is a really good conversation to have with your child.
Well, that's something we talk about a lot in this unit, is that heightened emotional reaction is totally normal, totally common. And parents getting a little caught up in it themselves is also totally normal and totally common. So, I mean, do you second step yourself? Do you breathe into the soup? Like, what is it that, how do you give yourself that space?
Sometimes you have to, right? You have to find the thing. There are literally times where I have to look at my daughter and say, I need a break. Mm-hmm. And if I don't take that or I don't breathe and walk away, we're just going to level each other up. So I have to do that sometimes too, for sure.
Well, what do you do?
I do a lot of dishes.
I'm not gonna mention that one.
Last night, my son was his emotions were a little bit heightened. He was playing a video game and he just couldn't beat this boss. And he was trying again and again, and he was doing really well, but it was just really frustrating. And I said, "Can I help?" And he goes, "No, I don't want your help." And I'm like, "Okay." I was a little bit heightened as well, so I just did some breathing, did some dishes, and then I hid. "Dad, can you come? I beat it. I ran over. He was so happy. It was really wonderful.
That's fantastic.
And then I needed to help him on another level 10 minutes later. But I mean, you know, he's progressing. I can see there's evidence. And a year ago, that would never have happened.
What would have happened a year ago?
I think he would have had a complete tantrum, a meltdown, thrown down the controller, stormed off, closed the door, started crying, and then we would have had to give him some space and then have a chat to him and just say, like, "Hey, like, you know, what happened there? Are you okay?" And then take a break, go back to it. Maybe, you know, your brain will be more, you know, ready to do it again. I'm sure you're going to do it because I know you're really good at this game.
Do you attribute that growth to both what you did when he was younger and also just him growing, his brain getting more connections to handle this kind?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. You know, my son's really lucky that they teach second step in his school. So I'm seeing evidence there of, you know, he'll say, "Hey, Dad, we did second step today. We were talking about problem solving, or we were talking about like empathy," and like, "Ah, that's fantastic. What did you learn? Tell me more." And I often find nighttime, bedtime, that's when everything comes out. I learn more about like how his day was, you know, if he had a fight with someone. And that's where you really start to see like some emotional growth there, because you're learning more about your child, but you're also learning, hey, you know, these are times where I can use my skills as a parent, my emotional skills to kind of help him, because he's still learning. He's got a lot to learn and I want to help him.
Do you think that there's a habit maybe with parents, particularly maybe new parents, to want to jump in and fix it like right in the moment and not give the kid the space to be where they're at?
I used to always want to solve the problem immediately. You know, I like to have resolution and then to move on. And it's not always like that.
Well, it's so interesting you said that too, because the thing I'm finding as Kate gets older, she's 8 and a half now, and for the last couple of years, I've really found like it's not for me to save her or rescue her or solve that for her. She really does need to do that. It's for me to like make sure it's a safe space or make sure she has the space, whatever that thing is. But generally, like if she's upset, okay, that's a good thing, right? We want you to learn how to be upset as a kid,
right?
Because you can't not know how to cope with that as an adult.
That's right.
So it's often that I'm like, okay, what do I need to do in this situation? And a lot of that isn't directly with her. Mm-hmm. It's like, I need to remove myself because I think I'm actually the one setting her off right now, or whatever that looks like. And I think that's the other part we were talking about earlier, not having the sitcom ending where it's all wrapped up in a bow. Most situations feel like, okay, she decompressed from that, let's go. And it's not until days later where you figure out, oh, she actually thought about this or had an emotion about that, or she'll tell you something will sneak in. "Well, you said that the other day." I'm like, "Wait, you were listening to me? I had no idea." So I think it's more about, you know,
sometimes you have to even reteach the lesson, right? It's not that you had the conversation or you taught, you worked on the skill and they've mastered it. Sometimes you reteach it, and it's not just your teens, 20s, 30s, but for hopefully your whole life, you are growing and learning. And this idea around emotion management continues to be a focus. You pick up new skills, you continue to flex the muscle.
I don't know if you guys know this, but parenting sounds really hard.
It is.
Yeah.
And really rewarding.
Yeah. And having social emotionally aware kids, this is a very big investment on a day-to-day basis. Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm very glad that we have these tools. Have any of your kids ever turned around and used any of this language with you? Like the little ones? Like, "Daddy, I think you're angry and I think you need to..."
last night. Dad, you need to take one of my stuffies and give it a hug. Or, Dad, you need to take some breaths. Here, I'll show you.
Really?
That's a bit quick, but yeah, that's good. And it does help. It shows that they're taking it in. Mm-hmm. And that they're saying like, hey, I learned this tool from my teacher, or I learned it from you. I see you're a bit stressed. I'm going to teach it back to you. My son loves being a teacher. My dad was a teacher. I've got many teachers in my family. He'll probably be a teacher too, and that's awesome.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that you should hug a stuffy. Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
It helps. It really does.
That leads me to something that we had talked about before, that this disconnect between hearing from your kid's teacher how they behave in school versus what you get at home, and that can be very surprising.
Yeah, it can.
Have you had this where like, oh, he's an angel, she's so perfect in class?
All the time. Yeah, at parent-teacher nights, it's like, oh, Hamish is really empathetic and he's really sociable and he cares for others and he's really attentive and he's focused and he listens. Like, hang on. That's not Hamish. That's not the Hamish I know. But it is, because I think at school they use their energy to pay attention, to listen, to focus, to share. And then when they get in the car, it all just bursts out. And then they get to be themselves because it is their safe space. I know that Hamish is that child. He is a caring, sharing child. He is really attentive. And he's got so much love to give as well. But he also has a range of emotions that, you know, can go from 1 to 100 in a second.
Sure.
So I need to help him with that. But it's great to hear that from your son or daughter's teacher or your child's teacher, that they like that. It's really affirming that they're becoming a great human being.
I can picture parents, though, making the mistake of saying, why can't you behave at home like you do at school? Why does your teacher say you're so nice, but you're so mean to your sister? Like, I'm sure there are parents who are triggered, is that the right word, to say that, to respond that way to their kid, that they've heard or they know that their child can behave differently elsewhere.
I've heard that in parent-teacher conferences as the teacher. Like, why don't you do this at home? And it's more of a joke in that scenario. Mm. But also because it's a completely different space for them, right? Mm-hmm. Do you show up at work and you're that exact person you are with your family at home or with your friends,
sure,
you know, having a cup of coffee at the cafe? Not necessarily, right? I mean, that's, we do go into different spaces and we have to understand. And that's part of this emotional growth too, mm-hmm. is that they're actually showing us emotional intelligence by being able to hold it together all day and understanding that that's an important space for them. And when they get home, while it's an important space, it's also safe, to your point, and they can kind of let some of that out. A lot of kids are way more anxious than we think they are at school. We put a lot of pressure on them, and they want to do really, really well for their teachers, for their parents. And so that's something that they're feeling all day long. And when they get home and, you know, their little sister runs in and does something, they might have an outburst because she does it every day, let's be honest, right? So I think there's definitely something to that dynamic to understand as the parent. Like, your kid really is that kid they're talking about. And that kid needs space to be a kid and be who they are safely too at your home. And sometimes we all have sides to us. It's not our best selves all the time. And that's okay. That's human. That's very normal of us.
I like what you just said too, because I think it's a switch in perspective for parents to not think of that their child is good in school but not as well behaved at home as a bad thing, but as a reflection of their child's actual emotional maturity, that they can behave that way for hours and hours on end while being stimulated and dealing with other children. That's actually an accomplishment versus a letdown that you can't do this at home. Like, I'm so proud of you that you can hold it together for an entire, basically a work day, let's be honest. Yeah. Well, that's really something. Something that I'm hearing, it sounds so obvious, but that one of the keys to successfully raising these emotionally, socially, emotionally aware children is to really invest in them, get to know them, meet them where they're at, listen to them so you can pick up on it later at bedtime. But what do we say to someone who feels like this is, we're asking maybe too much?
I mean, I was a single parent for a really long time. And again, I'd say you do this as much for yourself as you do for your child. So you got to find little moments to breathe, to remind them to breathe, to do the things that make sense for your child, and to not be one thing is enough.
Right.
One moment, one activity, one tactic. It doesn't have to be all the things. It doesn't need to be all the things. Not for you, not for them.
Well, you're proof of that. Well,
she still comes to me for money. But I see that as a good thing. I see that as a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, one of the lessons in the unit is helping kids understand that it's okay that other people have different reactions to things. Mm-hmm. Is it hard for them to accept the idea that someone else isn't seeing it through their eyes, isn't having the same emotional reaction as them?
It was always kind of illuminating for my daughter when she would recognize that another person had a different perspective or different emotional reaction than what she would do or how she would behave.
Is it that same curious blank stare we've heard tell of?
yeah, an iteration of that for sure.
I've seen that with adults too.
Yeah,
well, I mean, processing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Buffering.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. There's a lot of learning that happens when you recognize that different people respond differently to things. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and in our K2 kids, again, their brain isn't developed all the way to mm-hmm. see it and notice it as much. So what I've seen with kids is they might not even notice mm-hmm. the other kid reacting differently mm-hmm. until later, until you say something or it escalates or something. And so it's a really, for me, it was always a pointing out. Well, did you see that you wanted it this way, but your friend wanted it that way? Mm-hmm. And anger wasn't the first emotion your friend had. It was curiosity or question, whatever. But because you were unable to see that, your friend actually became mad or angry mm. because you weren't listening.
Could we say, like, developmentally, like your story about the rat? Is it not just that she wanted to touch it and wasn't being allowed to, but the sort of disconnect between, don't we all want to touch the rat? Mm-hmm. Why is it being taken? Don't we all feel the same way about the situation? What is happening? This is crazy. Is that something that's happening?
Could be. That's an interesting way to think about it because she wants to be a veterinarian. Like, my kid is an animal kid. So for her, maybe it was. Like, you're crazy.
This
is number
one,
you're throwing an animal in the trash.
Right?
So there might have been underlying things. And I was not emotionally intelligent enough at the time to think through that. I was taking the pictures, having a smile.
I think that's the overarching lesson in some ways here is have these tools, but let the child move through this stage of development the way they do it.
Yeah, like part of that is brain development, maturity, growth. They're going to go through puberty and adolescence and all of that, and it is going to work its way out. It takes longer for some kids than other kids, and that can be really frustrating as a parent. And I think that's a great lesson for all kids is we expect them, you know, in third grade, you're going to learn multiplication and division. You're going to do this and that and the other. And emotionally, you should be like this. But that's not really human of us, right?
Right.
We're all on our own little path. And while we develop similarly and our brains do grow and develop similarly, there are going to be kids who need a little extra time. And there are going to be kids who are light years ahead in different things, in different ways.
Mm.
And that's okay. Like, patience and calmness.
Long game.
And curiosity. Yeah.
Patience. Long game, curiosity,
yeah.
Calmness.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been terribly enlightening. I really hope that the parents listening to this hear some of themselves in this and have some of their concerns answered. I think from what little I know, this is one of the bigger lessons for parents, really, is this emotional management phase of their child's development. And being a guide to your child through this, I think that's a really excellent way to look at it. And I'm going to write that into the curriculum tomorrow. Thank you guys so much. This has been great.
Thank you.